time for the Wintrust Business Lunch, and always thrilled to chat with my good friend, founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network, Tom Gimbel. Tom, happy day after Memorial Day, my friend.
Always good to talk to you, John. I hope you had a great holiday weekend.
I did. Are you sitting cross-legged on the floor now going, and meditating?
You know what? We all have to find our inner peace somewhere, John.
I know. We kind of chuckle at it, but really, the more data that comes out to, whether you call it meditating, whether you do some yoga, or you just find some time away from their phone and just to kind of look inward. I mean, it helps you in life, but new research shows really helps you in business too, huh?
Yeah, I think the key is that we have so much going on in our brain that we're trying to balance. And the more technology we use, the more information that's coming at us. Where even if we only read the headlines on Twitter, we're getting more data, more information. Our kids are contacting us. It's not just when you get home from work, you talk to your kids. You're getting texts from them during the day and all these different forms of messaging. And there's so much in our human brain, our human computer that's called a brain, that you kind of have to reset the mechanism a little bit.
Right. And I think you hit on something key there, is that we are distracted while we are at work all the time. Maybe not through any fault of our own, whereas before maybe we would browse the internet forever. It's at us all the time. It's pinging us. It's taking us away from work. Does finding some time, even if it's at work, before work, or part of the work day, does that help ground us and get us back into what we're doing in the office a bit too?
Yeah, my take on this has been for quite some time, John, and that is, we've all got, multitasking. Some people say it's a positive, some people say it's a negative. But the difference is multitasking on things at work versus multitasking at work with also a bunch of other personal things, that doesn't really accomplish anything for you on the job. And we have to remember, we're getting paid a salary to do things and accomplish things. And if we can reset our human brain, our human computer, our brain, and we can really get that information. Now, there's different ways to do it. And this is one of the things that so many people go, oh, I'm not into meditation. I'm not going to wear 4 leather bracelets and become a Buddhist. And it's not about that.
Okay.
There's different ways to reset, going out and getting a sweat on and exercising to clear your brain. There's pure meditation. There's also the fact of journaling and writing, because if you get the thoughts out of your head and you get them down on paper, whether it be figuratively or literally paper, you're clearing it out of your brain. Those are the types of things that add clarity to your life.
So then, Tom, if you're a boss and you're managing a team, is it about saying, hey, if you need to do this, here's 30 minutes, you can do it? Or is it about maybe even setting time aside where your team members are going to do it however they want to do it, whether it's meditating, taking a stroll outside, and almost kind of giving them the reason to do it, the incentive to do it, by building it into the workday?
Well, I think there's two sides to that equation, John. If a manager tells you what to do all the time, they're a micromanager. If they micromanage you to do nothing, then you like it, right? Mm. So employees have to take ownership of their schedule and their day. And whether it's going out for lunch and taking some extra time, whether it's going to work a little bit early so you have time to meditate, whether it's getting a workout in before or after work or over your lunch, I think it's up to the employee to figure out their schedule and to find the time to do it. It doesn't have to be exactly at 10:30 on Tuesdays, because things come up in the workday. We have emergencies. We're paid to figure out problems. And this is a problem that we've got to do for ourselves and find the time that works.
Love that. Tom Gimbel, continuing our chat. He's the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. Okay, Tom. It's Mental Health Month, which is great. This tug and pull between employees and employers, bosses and workers, about whether it's a mental health day here or there, or being open and honest when there's struggles and when there's problems. This is a real delicate line that these companies and these employees have to navigate, isn't it?
It is. It is. And the difference is you can't see it, right? If someone breaks their leg, you can see it. And the problem is, it's a two-way street. There's companies that don't appreciate it, encourage it, realize it, but there's also employees that take advantage of it. And so it's really hard to find that fine line for what that is. And what overwhelms person A may not come close to overwhelming person B. And that's really the challenge. And that's why the employee has to own their own mental health, i.e., have therapy on a regular basis. exercise on a regular basis, meditate on a regular basis, is that if you're not taking care of yourself, it's not really fair to ask the company to bend over backwards if you're not doing the things that you need to do.
Is it up to the company, though, to at least make it known, hey, you know, we want you to do those things, you know, to have the time in your day to do X, Y, or Z?
Oh, I think that's the right thing. I, the same exact way as companies that give discounts for gym memberships and things like that. I think it's important for companies to say, we encourage mental health and we've got, you know, this great health insurance program that covers therapy and here's in-network providers and blah, 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 blah. You know, the employee on the flip side, if you schedule your therapy every week during the company meeting, you're not being a good corporate citizen. And there's just that there's a happy balance in doing things that benefit everybody.
Right. Or if your mental health days, if you get a couple, they always come on a Monday or a Friday, or they come after the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, right?
Right. Exactly right. If it's always on a Monday, that's probably a little bit self-serving. And I think that it's just you got to look at what the perception is and have the emotional intelligence to realize that if you need some time to recharge, that's not necessarily mental health. It just means you need time to recharge.
Right.
And to realize that when you're really stressed to the point of debilitation, that you've got to make sure you're doing it. But if you don't go to therapy and you don't ever exercise and you don't meditate, to then think that the company is gonna do things, it's kind of like being overweight and then wanting to sue 7-Eleven for having 64-ounce Slurpees.
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying there. And we really should delineate, there's kind of two different camps. There's the everyday mental health issues that I think a lot of us deal with, and then there are very serious mental health issues that can lead down dark roads that companies need to be aware of, and maybe that requires a little more hand-holding, or, you know, honoring American Disabilities Act, or, you know, adhering to some of our new thinking on how mental health is just as important as physical health in some ways.
Oh, John, I couldn't agree more. Number one, there's clinical depression, there's bipolar disorder. Those are real things that very productive employees can have, and they want, you know, they want help. Then you also have issues where a loved one dies or a divorce or a loved one sick, and you're having real mental challenges, not just in balancing taking care of these people, but also coping with life without them or whatever you're dealing with. And companies can really be great partners and employers because, you know, you want to get as much out of your employees when they're at full strength. And to get that, you also got to be there for them when they're not at full strength and help them get back. And that's the part of being a good partner, same as in any relationship.
And I do think that the best employees are best when they feel that respect from their bosses. They give 110%, especially and if you're a boss that recognizes you have a worker that does go above and beyond, to make sure to reciprocate that, because that can breed loyalty to unbounding ways.
Well, I've got an employee who's worked with me for years and years and years, and their dad is battling Parkinson's and is nearing the end, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And he needed time off to travel, and, you know, I'll work remote. And I said, listen, if you can work remote, great. If your mind's in a complete cluster and you need to, that's fine too. If you could just email and let people know that you're not going to be available, that would be great. And by the way, if you want to grab lunch, you know, when you get back and just shoot the breeze and talk about it, I'm more than happy to do that.
Yeah.
And he's like, you have no idea what that means. And I go, I think I do. Oh. I really think I do know what it means, because it's called being kind and thoughtful and knowing that you do things for people and they're good people and they're going to respond in kind when they're through it.
This is kind of related tangentially to just what you said, the idea of a boss kind of sticking up for you when things are a little rough on the employee's end. Do you think there's a lot of bosses out there that don't realize how big of a role they can play in an equation like that, where the stress of someone maybe not being able to be at work as much as they can be or want to be, dealing with a family member, that the stress is often, I'm worried at what my boss is going to think of me. The boss doing what you just did, I mean, they have a real weighty role in someone's personal mental health in those situations.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think a lot of employees or a lot of managers and leaders don't. And I think it's because They don't know where the lines are. They're afraid to cross it. They don't want to interfere in people's lives. And I think that goes back to one of my hot buttons, John, has always been culture. And it's what's the culture of the company, and do you really want authenticity? Do you really want vulnerability? And if you do, then talk about it. And quite frankly, you know, people still have jobs to do. And just because you're going through some personal tough times doesn't mean you let employees off the hook for their job. It does mean that you have a little bit perspective with timelines. You may have to take some work product off their plate and give it to somebody else. It may or may not affect them compensation-wise, but you've got to explain those things and walk people through it and realize that I'm willing as a leader to make some short-term changes because we care about you. And that's really what it's about. It's about opening the doors of communication. And the real rub on this, John, is you got to have the relationship and the culture before there's a problem.
Yep.
When the authenticity starts, when the employee needs something and they've never been vulnerable or authentic, then you have a problem because the manager doesn't know how to behave. So if you get both sides that can be authentic, you can really have success, but usually one side or the other, and it errs on both sides. I'm not giving management a free pass or the employee, is that then it's hard. But if you can be that way from the get-go, that's how you treat people. And I'm just, do unto others as you want to have done to you. And if you want your boss to treat you nicely when you got trauma, do the same thing to your subordinates.
30 seconds. Good answer, by the way, Tom. Good. 30 seconds. Pulse of jobs these days. We still gaining? You seeing more layoffs or we're steady as she goes?
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be just, how about this, John? Consistently inconsistent.
What do you mean?
I think it's going to be jobs. We'll still be adding jobs because there's just more employers out there, but it's not going to be 2019 or 2021 for a while. It's going to be a little bit bumpy, and I think that, you know, hard work will prevail. So keep your head down, do good work, and we'll see where things are at the end of the year after this crazy election.
And a 3.9% unemployment rate, steady as she goes, isn't the worst thing, Tom Gimbel. But that's where we'll have to leave it. CEO, founder of LaSalle Network. We'll talk again soon. Okay, Tom?
Only a few months until the Blackhawks starting.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
There we go, baby. Okay, take care, Tom. I could listen to the man. That man talk about anything for a long, long time. Jim Dahlke joining us now, our great guest that we have on, national editor at American Inno, ChicagoInno.com. Jim, good to talk to you.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, always great to chat with you, Jim. I am always intrigued by CEO pay, and that's a story that's been covered a bunch over the years with rising CEO pay. It looks like we just lost Jim Dahlke. Pete will work on getting him back on the line. Yeah, I always follow CEO pay stories and how much more the average CEO makes percentage-wise than one of the workers, and that's notoriously gone up since the 80s. One question I've always had, and I'm glad that the folks from Chicago Inno answering this, Jim, is startup CEO pay. So what do startup CEOs make, generally speaking?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question because, how much a startup CEO makes is kind of largely dependent on what the founder decides himself. Obviously, he has to run that by his board of advisors, investors. It's not just one man or woman kind of making a decision how much they make, but it kind of starts there. And it can get especially tricky even at the earliest stages where, you know, a company is just getting off the ground. And, you know, in startup world, often when you're at the earliest stages, your company is not exactly making a lot of money and you're kind of dependent on the venture capital that you're bringing in. So let's get to the data, right? So we talked to a group called Cruise Consulting. They take a look directly at this about how much startup founders make from kind of the seed, series A, series B level. The average startup CEO salary in 2024 is about $141,000 a year. This is down just a tick from $142,000 in 2023, and down from $150,000 in 2022. So that was really kind of the year that, you know, the startups were coming off the pandemic boom. Well, we saw a lot of growth in 2021, and CEOs getting paid, you know, handsomely then. As you would imagine, the more funding you raise as a startup CEO, your startup salary goes up. So when you're at the early stages, you're at the seed sort of stage of funding, your startup salary is the lowest at about $129,000. That goes up to $179,000 once you get to the Series A level of funding, and then the Series B CEOs are making about $227,000 this year. So that's kind of a look at what founders are making. And what's interesting about this too is that you see a lot of chatter online, from some investors who kind of say, hey, we really want our CEOs to be living very frugally, especially in the early days. It's almost kind of like, you romanticize this idea of this, the ramen noodle theory of, CEO pay, where we want you to be, live as frugally as possible, work as cheaply as possible, and really use our funding to invest in more areas of the business. We're starting to see some pushback on that from many people in the startup land, which says, hey, actually, we want our CEOs to get paid reasonable salaries. We want them to have a reasonable, wage, so they don't have to work for Uber and, get divorced over this. And so, what this Cruise Consulting is doing is kind of better providing some insights into, hey, here's what your peers are making, and maybe kind of put a plan together, or at least an outline of what a traditional startup CEO salary might be. So as you can imagine, these salaries range from literally $0, where CEOs are taking nothing, to over $300,000 a year.
Interesting. I imagine a lot of those CEOs also getting, options in the shares of the future of the company, right? That could be an attractive reason to get a CEO to come on. Hey, the better this company gets as a whole, the more you're going to be making.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, that's 100% a part of, all of these pay packages for CEOs and startups, whether you are the founder of a startup yourself, or maybe you're bringing in a CEO. However, that, that's not exactly going to pay your mortgage next month. So, the equity packages are very nice, but, that typically doesn't come into play, right, until your company, gets acquired and raises, larger rounds of funding later on. So, what this group is looking to do is kind of demystify how much CEOs get paid. And, one kind of frustrating part of this was that what emerged in their data is that a gender pay gap persists between male and female CEOs. The this year, female CEOs are earning on average $14,000 less than their male counterparts. What the Cruise Consulting really believes is that venture capital investors really have a unique opportunity to fix this, because they have, insight into how much their CEOs are making across all their investments. And they can see when, a female founder, a female CEO is making less than, what their typical male counterparts are making. And then they have an opportunity to kind of go in there and be like, hey, actually, you are paying yourself less than market rate. So I found that kind of interesting, that, venture capitalists have an opportunity to kind of level the playing field in terms of how much female CEOs are making compared to their male counterparts.
Interesting. If there's one area I thought the gender gap may not exist or exist on a lesser form, it'd be in the startup community, right? Starting fresh, building a whole building from scratch, and apparently not the case.
Yeah, and I think that really goes to, the issues that, female founders have faced in tech, historically. Harder to raise funding, obviously, the gender biases that persist in the industry, and, work their way all the way up to the CEO level, right? And so, one thing that I think that the industry is trying to do is just kind of make, pay a little bit more transparent and a little more, available to see kind of what folks are making. And then, even at the investor level, they can go in and say, well, like, a bunch of our female CEOs are making less than the male CEOs. Like, let's remedy that.
Chatting with Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno. Got time here, about a minute left for one more story. I love this headline: why Chicago could play a key role in water innovation. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, every city across the country looking for ways to grow tech talent, grow their startup ecosystem, find a competitive advantage compared to other cities. Some startup community leaders here actually believe the city of Chicago has an advantage thanks to Lake Michigan. The lake might not sound like a traditional ace up your sleeve for an emerging startup city, but you can point to the growth of one local startup, or Current, as an example of that. Current's a water innovation hub in Chicago. They launched 8 years ago with 3 employees. They're about to be at 15 with a $10 million budget, thanks in part to a new $160 million grant awarded to the Great Lakes Renew initiative from the U.S. National Science Foundation. Current is coordinating that initiative. It's going to work on things like finding new ways to recover and reuse water, energy, nutrients, stuff like that. High technologies, like especially like batteries, they need lots of water for development. Data centers need a lot of water to operate and cool their machinery, and data centers are a big player in the current AI race that we're seeing. And so Chicago believes that, hey, having access to fresh water right in our backyard could be a major player in the growth of the region's tech economy.
That's a fascinating read. Jim, where do you want people to go to read all these stories and more?
Yeah, you can check all this out at chicagono.com.
All right, Jim Dahlke, as always, good to talk to you, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, for sure. All right, let's get a look at our Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based U.S. Cellular is selling its wireless operation and certain spectrum assets to T-Mobile for $4.4 billion. In addition to wireless operations, T-Mobile will get about 30% of U.S. Cellular's spectrum assets across several spectrum bands. U.S. Cellular is one of the few remaining large regional wireless carriers and serves more than 4.6 million customers in 21 states. The company sold off Chicago area operations to Sprint in 2012. A suburban company that removes hazardous medical waste from hospitals, care centers, and veterinary clinics is exploring a potential sale. Cranes reports Bannockburn-based Stericycle is working with a financial advisor to weigh options after being contacted about a potential sale. The report says the company could attract other offers now that it's weighing options, specifically from other medical waste providers and infrastructure funds. Stericycle's other clients include ports, funeral homes, and government installations. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And with the business of food, we say good afternoon to Rich DeMuro.
When I first saw Farmer's Fridge at the airport, I'll admit it, I was kind of skeptical. After all, the idea of a salad from a vending machine didn't seem right. But now that I've tried it, I'm sold on the idea of more healthy options in more places, available 24/7.
Fresh food from a vending machine.
Really, the idea is it's the world's smallest restaurant.
While it might sound silly, it's an idea that spawned an entire business.
And when you see your idea here at one of the most iconic arenas in America, how do you feel?
It feels amazing. So, like, the idea from the beginning has, how do you get fresh food everywhere?
Luke Saunders is founder and CEO of Farmer's Fridge, a growing network of smart vending machines stocked with freshly made salads, wraps, bowls, and breakfast items.
I was a traveling salesman. I was looking for healthy options on the go. The only options were fast food and a gas station. I just figured if we could get food to people faster, we could make fresh, healthy food more accessible.
10 years later, Farmer's Fridge has hundreds of vending machines nationwide, inside airports, hospitals, schools, and stadiums. Food is prepped in Chicago, then trucked overnight. An algorithm determines where food goes to ensure peak freshness.
Every day we don't know where the food is going. So at 6 o'clock, we run a cost function algorithm, basically a fancy way to tell us where to send all the products. And then we load it on our own refrigerated trucks with our own drivers, and they travel all across the country to fill fridges.
Clear fridges and containers let you see the fresh products. Order from the screen or your phone. Shake it up and eat right from the recyclable jar or grab a plate.
We've got the Farmer's Fridge elote salad and from a vending machine. Dressing tastes fresh. Everything's crunchy, crispy, nice mix of flavors. Really good.
The 24/7 selection and reasonable prices sure beats a candy bar or sweets.
So if it's just as convenient, if it's affordable, if it tastes great, you stop thinking about whether or not it's healthy and you just want to buy Farmer's Fridge.
Farmer's Fridge actually has a patent on their just-in-time technology, which considers millions of options before deciding where and when to send their food. By the way, the salads I got were about $10 each. If you want to learn more about Farmer's Fridge, you can go to my website. It is richontech.tv.
There was a grill in here right now, and that was legally allowed to do in the radio studio. I may have grilled some up. Luckily, though, the nice folks at Epic Burger just fed me. David Grossman is the CEO over there. David, how are you doing, my friend? And it was yummy, by the way.
Okay, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And it kind of transported well, too. You never know, but the burger tasted great. The fries still held up. Took a couple sips of a shake as well. Tell us a little bit about Epic Burger. What are you guys all about?
Epic Burger is all about serving the best quality food and giving the great service. Currently, we have 9 locations. We've got Naperville under construction right now, and we've got Bloomington and Champaign, Illinois, coming certainly before the end of summer.
That's great news.
Been around since 2008, serving a quality product, and you know, today is National Hamburger Day.
I saw that. I see that they didn't time it out to be on Memorial Day every year, but they have it linger a little bit, which is great. National Hamburger Day. Okay, so what sets your hamburgers apart? Like, why is it, what puts the Epic in Epic?
Yeah, good question. It starts with our, like I said, our food quality. We serve premium certified Angus black beef, quality product. We get from Creekstone Farms in Kansas. Our buns are baked every day from Toronto Baking here in Chicago. Our cheeses are premium Wisconsin cheeses. All of our produce is fresh. Chicken is fresh. Turkey, our Beyond Burger, our ice cream for our milkshakes, our milk for our milkshakes. Everything that we serve at Epic is quality. No hormones, no preservatives, no additives.
And
all good stuff.
I'm looking across the glass, David, into the producer's booth where Lauren Lapka, our news anchor, and Andrew Harris, one of our producers, are rifling through the many selections you have given us here in the bag for Epic Burger. How has it been the last couple of years? You started in 2008, which wasn't like, you know, peak financial greatness times. How did the COVID and the supply chains and the, you know, the problems with labor, how have you guys weathered that?
Yeah, good question. Certainly, you know, a lot of issues, a lot of problems. I try to look at every problem as an opportunity. We certainly closed a few locations that were in the loop because of COVID. Regretted to do it. We fought, we battled. We didn't want to close any locations. But obviously things reshifted, recognized the importance of the suburbs, which is a great opportunity. Recognize the importance of having a drive-through. So, you know, four of our locations now have drive-throughs. So, you know, every time there's any challenge, again, supply chain issues, you know, we had to raise our prices. I guess it was May of 2022. So it's a little over 2 years now since we raised our prices. And again, it's not me just trying to be greedy. We had no choice. Everything became more expensive, from our paper, you know, to our buns, to our soda. Everything across the board, so we had to pass on that increase to our guests.
Yeah, which I imagine you don't would prefer rather not to do. By the way, we're chatting with David Grossman here on National Hamburger Day, president and CEO of Epic Burger. I know your name's David Grossman. I will just point out, I don't know if you know David Hochberg. He's one of our hosts here. You sound exactly like David Hochberg, and it's driving me crazy, David.
Well, I'm sure he's got a great voice.
Yeah, you have the same cadence as well. I had to chuckle there. Pete agrees with me. Okay, David, the beef industry as a whole, how has that weathered the storm, and what's the future? You know, there was a time when a lot of people were worried that people are going to stop eating beef. I guess that's why you have so many different options for sandwiches. What's the future of beef look like in America?
Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but people eat about 50 billion with a B, hamburgers every year. And certainly chicken has become unbelievably popular and will remain popular, but beef is not going anywhere. I think that as long as you serve a quality product, which we do and a lot of other restaurants do as well, people are always going to want to eat quality beef.
You mentioned
of course we do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, we do offer a turkey burger. We've got a Beyond Burger. We've got a great grilled and fried chicken sandwich. Certainly, we try to offer something for everybody. But by far, you know, beef is our number one selling item at Epic. And certainly across America, people still love a good quality hamburger.
Have rising fast food prices helped you in that? If I'm going to spend $12 for a meal at one of the fast food joints, why not just spend it at Epic Burger instead? Have you heard from customers like that?
Yeah, you know, certainly, you know, grocery store prices have gone up. Other fast food chains prices have gone up. You know, that always helps. And people, you know, realize they can't necessarily go out for a $5 lunch anymore. And then it was a $10 lunch, and now it's a $15 lunch. But, you know, I'm not sure if you've seen what McDonald's and Burger King are doing. You know, they've got these value meals,
yeah,
and they're selling them for $5. You know, I wish I could do that. You know, we certainly don't have the ability to sell our food for that cheap because of our quality. But I certainly wish we had that. So, you know, we have, you know, different promotions throughout our stores. We do a happy hour. We do a dollar off anything on the menu from 2 to 5 on Friday to try to give a little bit of a value, you know, oriented deal to, you know, value conscious customers. So today, because of National Burger Day, we're extending that offer. We're doing dollar off everything on our menu: burgers, fries, shakes, tenders, hot dogs, turkey burgers, for the entire day today to celebrate National Burger Day.
That's great.
But yeah, we try to compete. We try, you know, obviously I don't like to raise prices, as you know, you mentioned earlier. You know, we try to stay within a certain lane.
Right, but when you have eight locations instead of 8,000, you're limited in what you may be able to eat in some places or the other in terms of the cost. David, we're out of time. I got to let you go. Epicburger.com to see all the locations and all the deals. We'll chat again soon, David Grossman, okay?
See you soon. Thank you.